Okay. Thanks, Meg. I'm going to come to Hazel.
Yeah, just a small point. Obviously, IFAs have to do know your client stuff at the beginning of a process. And I'm way out of touch with all the compliance issues because I haven't been working in the business for like over 5 years now. But it strikes me that we should be talking to the regulator in this conversation, Ian. I don't know if you've got anybody from the regulator on here. And the other organisation that popped into my head, apart from STEP, which Paul, I think, mentioned, is the Society of Later Life Advisors. Having said that, I think LPAs and wills should be in place. Young people get run over by a bus. Young people get stabbed in the street these days, very sadly. So it isn't just about illness. It's about, accidents happen. People die as a result of sudden things. So the message need there's a message of education to the general public that we need to get out there, and whose responsibility that is, I don't know. But the general public need to be educated. Doctors need to work hand in glove with lawyers and financial planners, which they don't do now. I found I was juggling doctors and legal people and everything in silos. So there's a lot here. This is a big subject, and it touches in so many
I think it's
areas.
one we'll probably return to again in the coming months. I mean, it's proving very popular. We did a similar session on our protection forum on this a few weeks ago, slightly different group of people. And indeed, there is new best practice guidance coming out from the Chartered Insurance Institute any day now. Indeed, I thought it was being announced on Monday and I haven't seen the press release yet. I've actually got the guidance, but I can't use it right now. But watch this space. There is new guidance on surviving economic abuse that is coming out from the CII imminently. Paul, if I can come back to you on this, and if we can turn first to this crucial issue around the regulatory impact for advisors. You've shared with me some case studies where there've been FOS actions against advisors. Can we particularly look at the consequences of that and how our friends at the Ombudsman see these things?
Yeah, because financial advisors are regulated, then any advice they give in that capacity can be looked at by the Ombudsman if there's a case of what we know as professional negligence. And there are many cases about wills being advised and actions against advisors and providers too, that the will instructions haven't been followed, and therefore there's an action against because something's not worked. There are very few cases on lasting powers of attorney in that area. However, it is an ancillary activity to financial services. So if you're wrapping up the whole service with lasting powers of attorney, then that can be looked at because it's advice being given in that area.
Yeah, again, the issue around surviving economic abuse, and that was what, and I will, in fact, what we'll do is when we send out the feedback forms, which we will do, one of the things you'll be getting very shortly from us is a feedback form, and we really would ask you to fill it in because it helps us, guide these sessions better for you in the future. We'll include links to the two recent sessions that we did on surviving economic abuse. And we're also, Paul, you're happy for me to share the notes that you sent over earlier today, is that correct?
Yeah, I think we just got to check them again because I wrote them very quickly because there's
All
quite a
right, well,
lot to the.
we'll check them
Yeah.
once more.
We do.
Dave, your question. Sorry, Dave's got his hand up. Let's come to Dave's question.
Just Paul, if you could have a look at the question I put in the chat, please, that'd be great.
Yeah, I've
Yeah,
had a
I
look at
think.
that, Dave. I take it the purpose of the individual life policy has passed because the mortgage has been paid off.
Yes, that's right. And I explained to people that, if you choose to keep it going, which they might do if the survivor is in poor health, for example, and might not be able to take out fresh cover, it might be a death-only policy, it might include critical illness cover, but it gives them the choice. Of course, if they keep it going, it would only be the premium for the ongoing policy. The premium for the policy that had paid out would, of course, have ceased. So the effective paying in advance comes half the premium, if you like. Not a very good way of expressing it, but you know what I mean. But it's very important, of course, that the ownership changes from the deceased to the survivor, so that he or she can then, if they choose to keep the policy going, can, for example, place it in trust or keep it going if they want to have the terminal illness benefit for themselves, or do a split trust where they reserve the terminal illness. It just gives them options. But as I say, I've outlined it in the chat, the exact question.
Yeah. From my perspective, I think because the purpose of the policy is no longer the purpose, because it's just there to create money for whatever you're going to use it for. If that gift's in the will and that person's predeceased, then the will is probably going to say something like, if this person predeceased is the testator, then it should go to somebody else. Does it say that?
No, that's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking is that so you've got Fred and Ginger, let's say they've got no children. I don't know, if Fred dies, he wants Ginger to be able to pay the mortgage off. If Ginger dies, she wants Fred to be able to pay the mortgage off. And they want to, they're not concerned about inheritance tax. And also they don't want to put it in trust. To put it in trust effectively against inheritance tax, you have to give up rights to all of the benefits during your lifetime, including not being able to receive the payout in the event of being terminally ill. Which means they can't have it till after they actually died, which could mean the mortgage has to be paid for maybe quite a few months. So, but life of another, they can have the policy owner can get paid out on death, no probate delay, because it's not in the estate of the deceased. In the event of the insured person having a terminal illness, then the policy owner can get paid out immediately and pay the mortgage off. But it's the ownership of the survivor's policy that I'm concerned about. So can each party in their respective wills say, if I die, I want the ownership of any policy that I own to pass to my wife, Ginger, and vice versa, my husband, Fred?
Well, there's a couple of things you could do, I think, in lifetime. One is to assign the policy or renominate Or you can restructure the will, indeed, yeah, at any time.
So will the will actually cover the change of ownership then? Will it enable the change of ownership?
Well, if the gift is to a person who's predeceased, which I'm assuming policy.
I think, to be fair, Dave, yeah, we're not really here to give specific advice on individual cases. We're here to talk about the subject generically. We do have a question for Future Path Financial Planning, please. If you'd like to ask your question. Future Path, you came off mute, but you've gone back on. Okay.
Sorry, Teams is incredibly glitchy. I can't read any of the chat either. This might count as a personal question, but I think actually it's a broader question about practical application. So I've had some clients mention to me where they have set up LPAs, they've found just the process a bit confusing, and in some ways it needs to be simple, but it's obviously a very important step. And now actually I find myself, having been appointed a property and financial affairs attorney for a family member who is future proofing, it's not required at the moment, so it's set up as not needing not to be used until mental capacity is lost. My question is, again, just comment on the paperwork. I must admit, and I'm someone who's used to looking at this stuff, I don't find the paperwork that's received particularly clear. So, I've been sent registration keys, activation keys, and I'm looking at this thinking, should I do this now so that, God forbid, if he goes under a bus, I'm ready to act. And I, want to deal with it efficiently. That's why he's appointed me. Or does that look then like I might be trying to preemptively
if it's any consolation,
I was just going to say,
we are really running out of time now. So if I could ask you to just answer that question briefly, because I do need to wrap up, because we do try and keep these sessions on time.
Yeah.
Meg.
If it's any consolation, when I registered my mum's LPAs, I found it really complicated going through the route of doing it online. I ended up just going into the bank, because when I did try and register, for example, with Barclays Bank, they had no knowledge of it, and it was very time consuming. But I think with regard to the activation, you've only got a year to use that, and then after that, you'd have to go down the old process of physically contacting.
It does say you can, well, it says you can, you know, you can re-request new activation keys, but I'm thinking, you know, how long might that take, for example? So in your view, it's worth activating, it is worth activating at this point.
What I would do is look at the extent of your loved one's assets, and what does she use, or what does he use on a regular basis, and make sure that those organisations have got the LPA. Not everybody actually needs it, you know, for your daily living, if you like. With regard to health and welfare, what I would say is always get the GP registered with the lasting power of attorney. And I would also say with health and welfare, because they are just as important, if not more important, than power and property and finance. You know, we've all, or many of us, have got older parents, and they should really have LPAs in place. And I had a situation with my own mum. If they have an accident, take your LPA to the hospital, because what can happen is they suffer from, because of a trauma, they could suffer from delirium. And you can be in a situation, I think somebody alluded to before, where without the LPA, you can't give any instructions. If you've got the LPA there, they look at it, look to see whether there's any restrictions upon your acting. And if there's not, they will then treat you as the person who is the donor and say, you know, what is in that person's best interest. Okay. Sorry, I sort of blurred that out there.
Sorry. Oops, I've just gone to the wrong place. Damn it. Sorry. Apologies. Sharing the wrong screen. Right, we really do have come to the end of our time here. I will just quickly stick up a link there to which we will distribute with the feedback forms to where you can find more decisions on LPA cases for the Ombudsman. Really like to thank all our speakers for their time today. I hope everybody's found that a useful and very informative session. We are planning more around this subject in the coming months, so we will come back to you. Do please send back your feedback forms. If I can just flag a couple of future events, we do have a week today in London, our sixth Empowering Advice Through Technology conference, which will be very much focusing on the future of the industry. If you're not already booked to come, it's a very popular conference with people. I've put a link in the chat so you can register there. Our next events for this group, we have a protection forum on February the 5th, which will look at the impact of the budget on protection and IHT, and an advice tech forum on AI and suitability reports on the 26th of February. If you have joined this group, you will be invited to future sessions unless you've asked us not to do. Again, really big thanks to our speakers. I think have been tremendous today. And thank you all for your time and attention.